Good morning. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Aaron McNutt here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke. Bit of a damp start to the day.
Yes, good morning.
There we go. I have to turn on the mics. Both of them.
Good morning, Aaron. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hey.
We've just been talking about this a little bit. Yes. Bit of a soggy few days, but
it's awesome.
Not the worst thing that's ever happened.
It's the best because you know what? I just drove in and the crops are looking great.
Mm-hmm.
So
it is looking greener.
There's a lot of parts of the province that don't have it and saying they wish they had,
You
know, so we had to put up with another weekend of a little bit rainy weather, but I mean.
And it was a perfect week for me for it to rain because my irrigation pipe broke and so my water wasn't working and so I would have had to haul water all week.
This has worked out pretty good. Not a lot of people having to water the lawns this weekend.
No.
Well, at least not in the Saskatoon area.
I turned my pump off and so it's awesome to be able to turn that off, and because normally it runs 24/7 just about, so
now I just need it to dry up so I can cut my lawn because it's getting quite long.
Well, hopefully it looks like it's going to get a little bit nicer for Canada today, so we've got a few sunny days on the way, I think.
You know what, there's nothing like the rain. I mean, I irrigate and everything looks nice and green, but after a good rain, Things really green up. It's just amazing, the nutrients and everything else in rain is different. You know, it's quite amazing how good everything just perks up and just turns so nice and green. And I put some iron on some of my plants that had a little bit of yellowy leaves turning on them, some maples and some hydrangeas. And so I put some aluminum sulfate around and some iron on, and now this rain comes, and so everything's going to just perk back up.
Little extra boost.
Exactly.
If you have any questions for Rick or Jill, you can give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. We have Jean on the text line with a question on behalf of a friend. Is there a way to relocate poplar shoots from... One second. There we go. From runners successfully. There are several shoots emerging and would like to move them. Any recommendations?
Yeah, not in the middle of summer. That's for sure.
You want to
do that in early spring.
Okay.
Like, you know, that's even fall. I don't have great success in moving poplar suckers and that. But if you do it early spring, as soon as the frost's out of the ground, like around the 15th of, April type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can move them fairly successfully. I mean, you can even take, with poplars, you can even take hardwood cuttings, which is just pencil-sized cuttings off the tree themselves in March. Put them in the, about 6 inches long, put them in the fridge, and you can stick them in the ground, and a lot of them will grow too, so as long as you've got moisture, right? So, yeah, the suckers will move fine in the spring, so that's the best time. Summertime, once you cut the umbilical cord off from the mother plant, then, when this kind of heat, they won't last very long.
All right. So we have been talking a little bit about the rain and how, it is an opportunity to maybe boost some things.
Yep.
Lawns always get a lot of questions. I know my lawn's got a couple of not quite dead spots, but they're not looking great. How can we kind of use this rain to our advantage and maybe make the lawn look a little bit better?
Yeah, overseeding. Especially people have different issues with lawns. One could be an insect. One could be snow mold from last winter time is still looking. So just putting a little bit of soil over top, just a thin layer, not even very much, and then reseed over top. And there's a lot of things that even have them mixed in together, like a mulch and seed, put it over top. And just with moisture and in about 5 to 7 days, you'll still have little grass growing up and filling in those spots. So
yeah, one of the good things to point out too is to make sure if you have heavy thatch in your grass too, to make sure you get that up first so that the seed can actually hit the soil. So
a good rake roughing the soil up.
And then after you put the seed on, rough the seed into that soil again. So that's really important.
And like I said, that little layer of soil over top and this, because a lot of soils, lawns, initially when the house was built, it didn't have maybe a couple inches.
Yeah,
inches
it's usually
of soil.
Kind of that it's weird kind of, mud dirt mix.
And you'll see, patches. Well, that's because, one spot had more soil than the other spot because there was, dips and doodles and everything else. So it's just a matter of, I have a spot that's I know that I didn't get as much soil because there was a bit of a knoll there and so it's thinner. So I have to keep now, putting little thin layers of soil on or adding more fertilizer just to that area.
Yeah.
Just to help supplement not having good topsoil.
A work in progress.
I like that saying you said, dips and doodles.
Doodles.
I'm going to use that now.
We're adding it to the list.
Our dips and doodles.
And that's something you can do on kind of a bit of a gray weekend.
Well, a little hard to do work with soil in this kind of moisture, but I mean, if you just want to rake an area up because the ground is looser with a good garden rake and put some seed into it, now is perfect time to do it. I mean, yeah, the conditions after when the sun comes out after this, everything's going to just go poop, even the weeds.
go poop. Of course, the weeds, they love it.
Exactly. So,
if you have any questions or need some tips and tricks, you can give us a call or text 1-877-332-8255. We have the Canada Day long weekend coming up. Well, it's kind of underway for some of us. We were talking about this a little bit before the show. Lots of people taking the Monday off. Is there any projects that you're seeing people wanting to undertake this weekend?
Just filling in spots in the yard. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that lots right now. And of course, there's people that have new homes that are planning. You know, I know a neighbor down the street, the whole front, the re-landscaping and the whole front of their house is plants with pots in them, you know, so they're planning on getting it done. So yeah, but this other little spot in the yard that you're filling in, you know, maybe a plant died or, you know, you come to a spot where, maybe I should plant something in there and there's all kinds of, for spots like that, there's all kinds of new plants, like, you know, all kinds of hydrangeas that are just look beautiful blooming all summer long, or that spot you want to fill in because you can see the neighbor's deck or something like that. There's lots of, you know, like narrow flowering crabs or a parkland pillar birch, something that grows narrow but gives you color and everything else for the yard. There's lots of those kind of new types of plants out there right now. Or nine bark, which gives you purple colors, or, you know, like a glow girl spirea with the yellowy type of leaves with a white flower. And then the fall, they turn orange and red leaves. So there's all kinds of new plants that are out right now that you can put a spot and fill in. Or Diff Jill, there's all kinds of perennials. People are asking, I got the shady spot, you know, Hosta or goat's beard.
Sobeys or heuchera. There's so many nice ground covers too that you can use.
All right, perfect. We are going to take a quick break. Then we'll be back with more garden talk. We will, if you have a question or concern, comments, tips, anything, we'll take them. 1-877-332-8255. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. We're back with more Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Erin McNutt here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyk from Dutch Growers. If you have any questions, you can give us a call. 1-877-332-8255. We have a couple of texts that we can get to here. We'll start off with Les in Corning. Our coleus plant, was on our deck when some animals dug it up. This was about a week ago. We replanted the root and part that looked alive. It looks like it's coming back. Are they normally a tough plant to care for?
It's a coleus plant. Okay. So a coleus is an annual, usually does well in a shady to part sun location. There's some varieties that can do well in the sun. Now, if an animal has dug it up and kind of wrecked the top of the plant, it's going to take a while for it to come back. Mm-hmm. If you want to as well, it is a plant that you can take a cutting off of if you do have the top still.
Okay.
Throw it in some water and it will root quite quickly. But I know a lot of the garden centers, they do have lots of coleus in stock still. So if it's really bad, you might just want to run to the garden center, grab a new plant and have that rather than waiting.
Starting fresh.
Yes. Our season's so short. They are a pretty tough plant once you get them established. Okay. Now that we're getting some heat and everything like that, you should be fine.
The biggest thing right now is what, Jill? Fertilizing, right? Food.
Yeah.
The pots are getting to the size now where you need to give them food.
Yeah, and I'm fertilizing sometimes 1 to 2 times a week right now. So I put my slow-release fertilizer in, and then I fertilize once a week on top of that. But yes, fertilizing to get those plants going is the key to success along with consistent watering.
Perfect. We have Ian calling in from Saskatoon. Good morning, Ian. I'm just bringing up your pictures here for Rick and Jill to see. There we go.
Okay, so the first one there, that's a neighbor's cedars that he cut back drastically. So I had talked to you in the one picture that I sent where it's the front view of our house, and on the right side is a big, that woodwardy cedar that I had talked to you, and you said, yeah, I can trim it back. I want it to be about 6 feet, and it's about 8. if I was to basically butcher that thing like that other guy did to his house, will they come back eventually?
Yeah, it takes about anywhere from 3 to 5 years to get it really looking nice, okay? And that's fertilizing every 3 weeks from basically Mother's Day until July 15th. And just to get that growth happening, that's huge. But it will, but it's not going to happen in one season, okay?
Okay.
It'll take... Go ahead.
2020, sorry. 2020, 10E.
I like 30-10-10 because it's an acid base, and the cedars like an acid-based fertilizer.
Okay, so 3 weeks from when?
Every 3 weeks from Mother's Day, May the 10th, approximately, until July the 15th, and then you stop, okay, fertilizing.
So we're almost ready to stop fertilizing our cedars.
Yeah, we're getting close in the cedars because by August 1st, they basically set their terminal buds for the next year. Shrubs, you can go longer, but evergreens, they basically have... That's why I like fertilizing, start fertilizing around Mother's Day because they do most of the growth in June. So I'm setting the banquet table, putting lots of food in the soil so that when they do start growing, they can just grab the food and just like us, if we set the table and eat all the time... Yeah, they grow.
And in that picture that I sent you, way over on the left side there, there's actually a lilac. I have two lilacs. One, I was able to cut it really like back. It's filled out. It's beautiful. The one in the front, when I started to get rid of stuff, you know, the one third of the big one, I started being able to just grab like big trunks or whatever the word is, and like just snap them right out of there. They were rotten at the bottom.
Right.
So I'm thinking, we've been here almost 25 years, and that thing was big when we got here. So it's old. So the one picture I sent you, that flowering upright tree, it's in the McDonald's drive-thru at Stonebridge. And I thought, geez, I wonder if I could put that where that lilac is.
Yeah, that one in Stonebridge is called a purple spire flowering crab. And there's another one for in the city, too, is called, that has a sort of a greeny purple leaf and then a pink flower, the purple spire. And then there's a new one called midnight spire, and it's even a darker purple leaf with a pink flower. And in the city, the midnight spire don't work as well in the country, but the purple spire does. Okay, so either and midnight spire will work in the city easy with both of them, and so the purple spire is a little more vigorous growing, and like that spot at by the McDonald's drive-through. I mean, that's a pretty harsh spot with all the exhaust pipes and everything else, and they do fine there. Yeah.
So I was wondering because it's right out in the open in the boulevard, so. Can that go into a spot where a lilac is near the house?
Absolutely. Not a problem.
Yeah, I've got one right near the house. Yep. One thing that's great about that is they're such a narrow tree that they're not going to grow up and hit your eaves.
And they don't have a huge root system where you're going to damage anything either.
Yeah,
and I opened my window and they smell so nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, last question. You got me thinking about this. The Mugo pines that I have in front of my window, is this the time to do the candles?
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, you could have done even a little bit earlier, but now's the time.
Okay, and happy Canada Day.
Happy Canada Day. All right, we're going to head to Warman, where Elaine is on the line. Good morning. What's your question for Rick and Jill?
Good morning. We have a new yard. It was just landscaped last year, and we planted a mountain ash. It's called a Russian mountain ash, one on each side of the yard. The one on the east is in its second year now or whatever, and it's doing super well. The one on the west, after we planted it, within about 5 weeks, it started to die. And we replaced it in June, and now the same thing is happening.
Okay, so that location, I mean, it can be in different spots, even in the same yard, okay? And what happens is different soil conditions.
Okay.
And if it's in that same spot, you had two plants going, that means that you either have a heavier clay or it's either a sandier soil on one side from the other. I mean, you can change in a yard. Honestly, you can. And so when you dig it up, you want to check what kind of soil is there. If you have heavy clay,
there's a lot of clay there.
Yeah. So you can overwater a mountain ash, okay?
Okay.
So you just have to water the root ball, like as if it was in the pot.
Okay.
And only enough water to water the root ball and not the rest of the soil around it. Make your hole 2 to 3 times larger, wider than the pot that you plant. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of the clay and put good topsoil in. Okay.
Okay.
And
I think he did put good soil in when he planted the second one.
Yep. And like I said, now you have to watch. There might be a swale going through where the water, you know, runs from your sprinklers into where the hole is. You don't want a spot where you leave a big, big dish where the water will can sit from running off from a downspout or, you know, a sump pump or anything like that. Mountain ash don't like that, okay?
Okay. So we're kind of at the point when this one's dying out on us again.
Yep.
Can you suggest a tree that could survive that condition?
If you want to put in there, if you want to plant about the same size tree, I would suggest trying a Ming cherry.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
That will do better. It's a beautiful tree, about the same size as a mountain ash. You're not getting two obviously different sizes of trees. It is a beautiful tree.
And we don't want anything that drops fruit, does that?
It'll have, mountain ashes have fruit as well, right?
Yeah.
So the Ming cherry have tiny fruit, not even close to the size of a mountain ash, so you have way less fruit.
Okay. Sounds like a good suggestion.
Yep.
So thank you very much.
If you want the white flowers, another one too, on top of that could be a spring snow flowering crab.
Okay.
Zillions of white flowers and it's sterile, no fruit.
Okay.
Green leaves.
Spring snow flowering crab.
Yeah, either that. Okay. Try look at the Ming cherry and the spring snow flowering crab.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, bye-bye.
I know. We have time for one more quick call. We'll go to Anna Marie in Swift Current. Good morning. What's your question for Rick and Jill?
Oh, hi there. The creeping bell flower, I have it literally all over my yard. Is there any way, and do you know what the steps of getting plant named invasive?
Getting plants named invasive? Oh, I think we're losing you here a little bit.
We lost him. Getting it named invasive species, it's a long process, but I mean, a lot of weeds are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of people, bellflower is one of them, people might think dandelions would be an invasive species mm-hmm. too, right? But it's not. It's not named as that. So it's a lot tougher. I mean, there is a bunch of trees that do go into waterways and that kind of stuff. They're more interested in naming those ones that can, take away from habitat from fish and everything else mm-hmm. and wildlife and those kind of things. But otherwise, yeah, bellflowers, best thing to do is just don't let it go to flower because it has a zillion seeds. Use corn gluten because it's a natural pre-emergent herbicide and put it down heavy. And that helps the weed seeds from germinating. And then using something like Weed Be Gone, which is an iron product or, some other products like that, or just keep picking it and don't let it go to flower is the big one.
Okay. Is there any steps that she could take to have it scheduled as an invasive plant?
There is a website called saskinvasives.ca. You can go there, also reporting it to the Ministry of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. You can do that as well in the environment. So there are all different forms you can fill it online.
Yep.
To get something reported invasive, it has to hit lots of criteria, including being able to survive naturally, and it has to be usually destroying a waterway or something like that to be called invasive. So, you can report it or you can look into seeing what includes, what makes things on the invasive mm-hmm. list too. So educating yourself is always a really good idea too. So yeah, you can go to those two areas and check it out.
Good morning. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Erin McNutt here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers. If you have a question or any tips or really anything, you can give us a call. 1-877-332-8255. We have some people who have been very patient on the phone line with us. So we'll head to Watson where we find Claire. Good morning, Claire. What's your question for Rick and Jill?
My question is my dahlias.
Okay.
They look wonderful now that when they're starting to make a bud in that whole area, the leaf is wrinkled and it wants to close. There's no bug in there because I checked, but every plant has done that.
So a couple things you could look for. Number one would be in those ones, if it's an insect, it could be a mite.
Okay. Or thrips would be the other one.
Or thrip, and they're really hard to see. Like you have to really take a close, especially mites, you almost need a magnifying glass to see them.
Okay.
Right?
Or with thrips, you would take a white piece of paper and just tap them on there, and you'll see almost like little tiny
Tiny, you know, not like a big aphid or anything like that. It's just little tiny bugs you'll see moving on the white paper.
Okay.
You know, so you can take a look for that. That would be that. And then other than that, it would be just making sure you're consistent watering. And also making sure that you're using a fertilizer with calcium and zinc and magnesium and everything else.
And dahlias are, they don't like high nitrogen. So if you have high nitrogen, you're going to have trouble with your budding too. So you could suggest a fertilizer.
And that's why I was saying the one that has the micronutrients in it, like 20-20-20 doesn't have any micronutrients in it. It's too high of a nitrogen for them. So you want
to have the alfalfa.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Alfalfa pellets would be perfect. Just making a tea or sprinkle some pellets and work it in the soil a little bit and water them that way. That's perfect for them. Okay.
And my other thing is a positive. I've been listening to the garden show for several years. The first year, somebody said, put a slice of onion with your potato, and you won't have potato bugs. I did that, but I was skimpy on the onions, and the ones that I didn't do, I got bugs.
Yep.
The next year, somebody said something about penny matches, the sulfur. I did that. It worked, but I was skimpy on the matches.
Yep.
This year, somebody phoned in and said about the bush beans. I planted a row of bush beans on one end, and then my potatoes and another row of bush beans, and I have no potato bugs.
There you go. Bush beans.
Yes.
That's an easy one. That's so simple, just to plant some. Companion planting works great, whether it be marigolds, bush beans, and all kinds of other, you know, basil. There's all kinds of plants that you can companion plant with other plants that make a huge difference. So there you go, bush beans. Thank you.
The potatoes are healthy. They're blooming. They're lovely.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and keep us posted how that goes for the summer.
Bye.
I know. We'll head to Saskatoon. Paul is waiting on the line. Good morning, Paul. Paul, what's your question for Rick and Jill?
Yeah, we've been trying to plant potentillas.
Yes.
And they keep dying on us. And you go anywhere, you know, it seems to be a landscaping staple of these places. And we can't even get one to last more than a month.
Well, is that right? Now, the two things when you're first planting any type of plant is making sure that your moisture is good, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but one thing potentillas do not like is too much moisture, okay? So that you don't want to overwater them. That's a big one with potentillas. But they need to be established, so they need to be kept moist until they get the root system out into out of the planting hole, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Once they get the roots out of the planting hole, then they're very, very drought tolerant potentillas. Like they don't like having them. So that you can over care for them by adding too much water for potentillas, and they will not like that. Okay.
Okay.
So probe the soil. What I like using is a piece of rebar. 3/8 rebar. It's really, you can buy it. It's cheap. It's a cheap water meter, I call it. And so you can stick it in the ground, but to the bottom of the planting hole, pull it up because the rebar has ribs on it. It'll bring a sample from the bottom of the hole because you don't know what it's like down there. And then just water when it needs moisture, okay? And it needs a little bit more moisture when it's first establishing for the first 3 weeks. And after that, less water.
Now, if you didn't like, if you're having trouble with the potentilla, what are some other suggestions you can get that might be an easier plant?
Well, if you want a small one, you can go a small plant like that, which flowers as well. There's a bunch of spireas that do well, and they can take a little bit more moisture if it is a wetter spot. And so things like the Taurus spirea or the Glow Girl, or there's the Big Bang, there's Ceres, and there's a whole bunch of new ones out there right now that will do well. Or otherwise, even plants like cranberries. There's all kinds of different sizes of cranberries, ones that stay only 2x2, 3x3, 5x5, 8 feet high. There's all different varieties. So there's a lot. If you're having problems with that potentilla, there's other plants that will do really well there. So
okay, I'll give those a try.
Is it sunny or shady there?
It's on the south.
Yeah, so it's sunny. So
west corner.
Yep, potentillas love that kind of corner. So normally they do fine.
That's what I figured, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's interesting because normally potentillas will grow anywhere. So.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye.
I know. We'll take a couple of texts before we head to a quick break here. We'll start off with Barb in Edgeley. She sent in a couple of pictures. It looks like some green leaves with some kind of holes in them. She says, what could be eating this? These tiny holes in my rose bush. I've tried Endol, but doesn't seem to have helped. What do I do to stop it?
Okay. So she has what you call is little brown blotches. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like two things that'll affect roses this time of the year. One is a blotches and the other one is little circular half moon shaped cuts in the, okay. in the leaf. Okay. The blotches are what we call, it's from basically from a fly that lays an egg, and then the larva, it looks like it's with what I call a pear slug.
Okay.
It's a little.
And that's kind of what this looks like. It's almost like little burn marks a little bit.
Yeah, little burn marks, and a blotchy, almost like transparent almost. Mm-hmm. And so on the back side of the leaf, you'll see a little pear, what I call a little slug. It's not very long. It's probably about, 3 or 4 millimeters long. And at the maximum, and then what they do is they suck on the leaf, and they suck all the chloroform out of the leaf. That's what they do. And so to get rid of them, they're easy to get rid of. All you need to do is spray your Endol or your Bug X out, but you have to get the bottom side of the leaf.
Okay.
If you just spray the top side of the leaf, you're not going to contact them, and you won't be able to get them. So you have to use a sprayer that's actually going to flip the leaf a little bit, or you have to turn your sprayer upside down, right, underneath the leaf to get them. And another one that with a round cutout in the leaves is called, basically, that's a leaf cutter bee.
Okay.
And those ones, I just leave them, because leaf cutter bees are great pollinators. It won't hurt the, you get some half moon cuts out of the leaves, but it won't hurt the plant. And they usually don't take enough leaf to really hurt the plant at all. So I just leave it alone.
So bottom line, these two things aren't going, they're an aesthetic.
Aesthetic.
On the plant. They're not something that's going to harm the plant. Yeah. However, if you get them so bad that your plant is sort of deteriorating, your plant's not healthy to begin with, your plant's aesthetic can go downhill really quickly. So keeping that plant fertilized is really important, and also keeping that watering consistent during that time too.
Keep them growing, getting new leaves come out, and then the plant can, outgrow those kind of things, because the pear slug is just the cycle is not very long.
Okay.
So they'll disappear, and then the leaves will come out, and you won't even see it.
All right, perfect. We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll get to Cody, who looks like they've just called in. You can give us a call at 1-877-332-8255. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. A bit of a gray Sunday, but seems to be lightening up a bit here on in the Saskatoon office. We have Rick and Jill here from Dutch Growers, and we have some people patiently waiting for us on the phone line right now. So we will stay in Saskatoon where we find Cody. Good morning. What's your question for Rick and Jill?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have some Japanese red lily beetles that have been on my lilies for few years now, so I'm using Endol on them, and I'm trying to spray the tops and the bottoms of the leaves and try to get them, particularly after it rains and stuff like that too, but and that seems to keep them off for the most part, and that keeps the slug off the bottom of the leaf too, but they come back year after year. I'm trying to look for a more permanent solution to get rid of these things so they don't come back every year.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Once you have them, you got to keep, you have to break the cycle of making sure they don't lay eggs and do the recycle back over again, right? And even diatomaceous earth on the soil itself. We'll get the bug from coming through. We'll get the bug come as it comes through the soil. And then it gets basically crushed up seashells on them. It gets into all their crevices and joint legs and everything else and dehydrates them.
That's more early in the spring.
Yeah, early in the spring. And well, then when they go back down into the soil again, because they go back and forth. And so that's another way. But you have to reapply it if it gets really like a heavy rain or something like that,
But right. So when it's when you have mulch down there, I assume you'd have to apply quite a bit of that diatomaceous earth.
Exactly, because the mulch, it just falls through. It doesn't just it's hard for them just to walk through it, right? And when you have mulch, so that's a little tougher to do. So you might have to pull the mulch back a little bit, sprinkle the diatomaceous earth, and just put the mulch back on top of it.
Okay, that's an option that I might have to look at doing there.
But scouting and picking is your best one, and what you're doing with the end all is keeping the numbers down. That's a really good idea too. It's a tricky one once you get into a cycle to get rid of them, but what you're doing is keeping them at bay, and that sometimes is a key for success when you're doing pest management too.
Okay, great.
Okay.
I have another question for you if I have time.
Yeah.
What is the best way to prune huckleberry or gooseberry bushes?
Gooseberry bushes. Basically, I like giving them a bit of a pruning in the spring, right? And just to shape them and to thin them a bit so that they get, because they get fairly thick in the middle, right? And so you get more light and more berries into the middle of the plant. And also when you give them a pruning in the spring, it stresses the plant a little bit and they actually will produce more fruit for you as well. And so, and then also make sure when you fertilize, after you prune them, using a fertilizer called Fruit and Berry, because if you give them too much nitrogen, okay, so if you use a 20-20-20 or something like that, you actually will get less fruit as well and more growth, more top growth, and less berries. And so, but basically, I like to either mostly in the early spring, I like to do my pruning on gooseberries. So I do it in as soon as the snow is gone, like as soon as I can get at the plant, I prune it, like, so that's the beginning of April. I have pruned them in...
And you're taking about a third off when you're pruning?
I've anywhere, 25 to 30%, that's what I'll do, a pruning of it. And then you'll get lots of growth and you'll get lots of berries as well.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yep.
Thanks, Cody.
Great day.
You too. Pat in Saskatoon on the line. Good morning, Pat. What's your question for Rick and Jill?
Yeah.
Good morning. What's your question for Rick and Jill?
We have got a bad infestation of potato beetles at our community garden. What's the best thing to use?
Well, we just had a caller on. Using the bush beans, using the beans in between and things like marigolds in between. Otherwise, just diatomaceous earth or actually getting out there and... Yeah, picking.
I've also heard that the mosquito barrier, the garlic spray,
can be
a good deterrent as well, too. That's
a good deterrent, too. You can spray it onto the plant, and it won't hurt the plant, and it deters a lot of different insects away. It's just like the marigold or the bush bean will do to deter them. And also, people also will put slices of onion in with the plants when they plant the potato as well. That's like a companion planting as well. It absorbs it, and they don't like the.
But
potato.
At this point in time, when the garden's already planted,
you can't do that. So it's basically picking and using the garlic spray on top of them. That's about all you can really do right now.
Okay, and do you sell the garlic spray?
Yep, you can get it at most garden centers. It's called Mosquito Barrier. It's concentrated pure garlic extract. That's what it is.
Okay. Good. Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Okay, we will take a couple of texts before we head to our next news break. This one, no name on it. It's asking, when is the best time to move lilies to a different spot in the yard?
Yeah, I think the best time to do is when the plant is dormant. So I usually will mark them when they're finished
blooming.
That's
the key, is marking, so you'll find them.
And then moving them in the early spring is actually probably the best time. In the fall, I find our season is such a short fall season, mm-hmm. so it takes so long for the plant to shut down. You don't want to be cutting your lilies down while they're still green. You want them to die back down into the bulb. And then I like moving them in the spring so that they can get established again. You're not going into a winter with a freshly planted plant where it's been disturbed.
All right. This one is coming from Mark. It says, good morning, crew. I'm on a farm at Elrose. I had two flower plants I had never seen before appear in my garden. This year, there are probably 30 volunteer plants. They're gorgeous looking, but I'm a bit wary of the plants as I don't recognize them. So we'll get them I'm going to send them the number and we can get them to send us a picture of that because I think it'll be easier if we can actually see it. So we'll do that now, but we'll go to Angela. Can I dig out lilac suckers and plant them now? Can I trim back the tree now as it's growing a little out of control on the sides?
Yeah.
Is bone meal good for Okanese poplar trees?
Bone meal's good for any plant.
Okay, good. Yep. She says it's about 3 years old.
Yep, perfect. And lilacs, yeah, now's the time to prune them and then get them a fertilizer to get them growing so they'll bloom more next year.
Okay.
You're not doing a major pruning, but all those shaping and those kind of things, now's right after they finish blooming. And you want to cut all those old flower heads off as well.
Okay.
And then, like I said, get new growth on. They bloom on second year wood. So the growth that happens this year, they'll bloom on next year.
Okay.
And so, yeah, the bone meal works good. The other one was transplanting suckers.
Yes.
No, do them in the fall or early in the fall once the leaves fall off, or the best time is the as soon as the frost is out of the ground in the spring.
Okay, so it's maybe add it to the to-do list. It's not a today
thing. You do it now. We had a caller about a poplar earlier on talking about that. If you do it this time of the year, they won't survive.
Okay, and Angela continues, does bone meal expire?
Bone meal, no, doesn't expire. Just if you get it wet, then you have problems with it. But other than that, keep it dry and then use it and doesn't expire.
Yeah, I find a lot with those granulars, that's the biggest problem. If you store them in the shed, either the humidity builds up in the packaging and then it gets quite moist inside there. Yeah. So,
all right. We will take more of your questions. If you need anything answered or you just have some tips for us, you can give us a call. 1-877-332-8255. We'll take a quick break for news and be back with more Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Erin McNutt here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendijk from Dutch Growers. We have a few texts that we can get to, but we always like to hear from you as well. You can give us a call at 1-877-332-8255. We'll start off in Saskatoon with Kat. Says, my south-facing back lawn, so much quack grass, got irritated and put a Roundup on the whole thing and want to put a ground cover. Any suggestions?
Ground cover. You could do multiple things. If you want to get away from grass completely, you can basically turn that into a xeriscape even, you know, like you can go to, so xeriscapes means you're putting mulches down and that kind of stuff, and you're putting plants in that don't take very much water, right? Mm-hmm. Like if it's, you said south facing, right?
Yes.
So sedums and thyme,
and there's lots of perennials. You can put some ground cover like a phlox or even a Prince of Wales or Wiltone Blue Rug Juniper, which are just a creeping juniper and cover lots of ground.
Okay.
You know, like they'll get about 5 to 6 feet wide. So there's lots of different plants you can put in there.
But one thing that I have seen, if you're doing a xeriscape, do your research, look up some different plants that you like and plan it out ahead of time. Because I do find if you're just like, you know what, I don't want grass and I'm just going to throw some different perennials down, it just looks like a mess if you don't do it properly.
And planting groups, and especially odd numbers, threes or fives of each, because it covers a bigger area and gives you a bigger impact rather than the polka dotting plants all through the, you know, all different types of plants.
And then use things like elevation in your yard. So maybe make some little, what did you call them before?
Like pitcher mounds type of thing.
Dips and something.
Dips and doodles.
Dips and doodles.
Make some dips and doodles. And if you have like anything like some large boulders, putting those in amongst too. It just adds some more dimension to your yard so it doesn't just look like a flat lawn that just is random. Because otherwise you'll get complaints from your neighbors.
And it's good to do the planning now when you're starting fresh.
Yep. And there's lots of people going away. They want to be watering and all that kind of stuff on the lawn. So especially even front lawn, a lot of people are going into xeriscaping, those kind of things. And with a backyard where they're using it more rather than just driving into the garage past, you know, they're doing that to the, you know, xeriscaping that in front yard and making their backyard their green spot.
Yeah. Lots of options. Exactly. Yeah. We have Linda from Langham. I have Nanking cherries. They have grown well, flower in the spring, but produce very little fruit.
Yep.
I had them on the farm and got loads of fruit. Just wondering why they won't produce here, or is there anything I can do?
Lots of sun. Okay. That's what they need. They also need other Nanking cherries, obviously, type to pollinate each other. Also, one thing about the country is that a lot of times they're a little more stressed out there than they are in the city. And so just watch your fertilizing and watering, like they don't like a ton of fertilizer to produce. And also making sure that you're pruning them. Because if you get a lot more growth in the city because, you know, you're irrigating more and everything else, then they'll produce, I've even used them as a hedge, so they'll produce a lot of growth, but not a lot of cherries.
Okay.
So so just, you know, just use a fruit and berry fertilizer on them, which is low nitrogen for sure. Making sure that you're pruning them every spring, because that also stresses them a bit to thin them out and also makes them produce more as well.
All right. This one comes with pictures, so I'll load those up in just a moment. Says, good morning. I planted this tree 2 years ago. It had a good year last year, but this year the top seems to have died and there's now shoots. So we're kind of looking at a bit of a purpley tree here. This is what it looks like on top. Just like sticks a little bit.
Yep. I just had to stand up and look at the picture a bit better. It's a flowering crab.
Yeah.
Rich, maybe just describe what's happening in that picture.
The top, now it's coming just from the base, okay? And, mm-hmm. and the top is all died. The top could have died for a number of different reasons. One could be sun scald, which is the sun in the wintertime, you know, damaging the bark. So I use it was basically for a tree trunk wrap, which is either plastic wrap about 3 feet tall, or you can use another paper wrap, which you can wrap around depending on the size of the trunk. It could be from a rabbit or a vole chewing around the base. I can't tell from the picture whether the bottom has been damaged or not. Actually, it looks like there might be damage on the base. I just bared.
Yeah, we have a bit of a closer up picture
bird,
here.
A bird sitting on the tree, but
it's hard to tell. We have a lot of suckers coming out of the base of the tree, but the top of the tree.
So the
is
root is fine,
dead.
But the top is done, and a lot of times that'll be from winter damage, whether it never shut down properly in the fall, it had too much moisture and never really changed color of leaves and everything else. So there's just a number of different reasons.
Now with the shoots coming from the bottom, will those be the same as the top?
It looks like it's coming from above the graft because the leaves are still purple, right? Mm-hmm. So it looks like those, you can also train one of the new ones to be another plant as well.
Okay.
So,
but it's going to take time. So
it all should go pretty quick though. Like I said, they are, if they weren't from the true tree, they'd be green.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
Because the green, they're grafted onto just a wild crab.
Okay.
And so, but these are colored leaves. So it's coming from the same above the graft, so you can actually train.
So how long do you want that to grow before you cut that main tree off?
Well, actually, you could cut the main tree off anytime now because it's dead.
Okay.
The top of the tree is dead, so you can cut that part anytime. And then what I'd do is I would select two or three stems to come up, and I'd trim off the rest of them, so all the energy goes to those two or three stems. And then next year, I take another stem out, and the following year, I take another stem out. That way, I have at least one to choose from in case something happens to another one, right?
Okay. Kind of picking your strongest one every time.
Every time.
Okay. A project, but it'll work.
It'll work.
This one is from Kathy from Battleford. She says, enjoy your show very much. Thank you. I'm having trouble with a few things. Onion maggots, yellowing leaves on my daylilies, and potato leaves that curl up. So I'm thinking she's just looking for some tips. Maybe we'll start off with onion maggots. What do we do to address those?
Onion maggots, what happens with those ones there, the best thing to do is when you plant them in the spring is that what you do is you wait just a little bit longer to plant. You don't plant them the same time as your garden, because what happens is the fly is going to be in the ground. Okay. And it's going to come out and then land on things like, they like yellow, so they'll land on a dandelion or something like that. Lots of dandelions, right? They'll hang around there and say, I'm just going to wait here until the onions pop out of the ground, and then I'm going to go fly over there and lay my eggs, and then the eggs will hatch, and then the larva will go down to the onion. Another thing you can do is put a crop cover over. And so crop cover is basically a white fabric, very thin, but you can put it over top and put little pieces of irrigation pipe or little pieces of wire to make a little dome.
Yeah.
Or you can use a clonch, which is actually, it's basically a little tiny, only about a foot and a half tall. It's an accordion style little greenhouse, right? And you put it over top, and then your fly can't get in there, okay? And then after, it's only for a short time, and then you can take it off because the fly has gone somewhere else and they won't lay their eggs.
All right, perfect.
Now with the daylily, with the leaves looking a little bit pale, you want to just get some fertilizer on there. That will correct it really quickly. Even a 20-20-20 fertilizer would be perfect for that. And then the last question was what her potatoes.
Yeah, the leaves are curling up a bit.
So that could be from watering. So either too dry or too wet. Right. You'll see that in both instances. The other thing that curls the leaves is aphids. So if you see a sticky substance on the leaf along with curling and maybe even some ants crawling on there, it's probably an aphid issue, and you'd combat that with a product called Endol.
All right, perfect. We are going to head into our next break on that note. If you have any questions or need some tips, you can give us a call. 1-877-332-8255. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. We're back with more Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Erin McNutt here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyk from Dutch Growers. If you have a question, you can give us a call at 1-877-332-8255. We're going to circle back to our text from Mark at a farm near Elrose. He was asking for us if we could identify, I don't know what I'm doing. Rick and Jill.
You're learning.
I'm learning some stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
if we could identify the plant for him, he's seen a couple last year. They just popped out of nowhere. And now says he has this year about 30 volunteer plants. It looks really nice. It's like lots of greenery, some nice color on here.
They almost look like large peonies in a bright pink color. Yep. But surprise, surprise, they aren't peonies. They are a double giant poppy that you have there. And those you will see, they only come up from seed. Mm-hmm. So they don't grow off their plant every year. So every year the plant's going to die back to the ground and just the seed that sort of settles. And you probably got them from a bird that came and dropped some seed in your yard, or an animal that maybe ate some seed and then its feces were in the area. So that's how it started. Each one of those seed pods, if you want to collect the seeds so that you have them so you can put them in specific areas, you can do that. Sometimes people take just a mesh bag and put it over the pod so that when it explodes,
they actually explode. So then that's why they spread so far, right?
Yeah.
So
beautiful, beautiful plants.
Yeah, they look really nice.
So if you don't want them to be even more spread out, then you need to collect the seed pods before they explode, and then either give them to friends or destroy them or do something with them, or like Jill said, put them in a spot where you want them.
But these are not an invasive plant. They're a very beautiful plant. Yeah. And even early on in the spring when you see them starting to come up, you can take a nice 4-inch or 6-inch pot, dig them out, and then you can move them to an area. But you want to do that early in the spring.
Okay. So no moving them now, but
very colorful.
Yeah,
very nice.
They look really nice.
We have some in a bed, you know, a little farther out in the back part of the yard, and you can actually say, you look across the yard and say, oh, those look nice.
Yeah.
You know?
So,
yeah, they're beautiful.
We have a couple more texts that we can get to here. This is Dana in Weyburn. I've had to get my snow blower going to get rid of poplar fluff in my area. I read this happens because the trees are stressed. Can I get the tree some therapy or medication? Is there anything we can do to make it less stressed?
Fertilizer and water.
All right.
You know, we've been through a drought. I mean, we have some rain right now, but I mean, whenever you get did you notice the Manchurian elms had a zillion seeds this year too?
All of a sudden it is looking much greener outside here.
So the same thing. This year they had tons on because it's been a little more stressful the last couple of years with rain and everything else. So that's when they'll produce more seed to try to reproduce themselves because they think they're in trouble, right?
So even getting some root feeders down if you have a tree that is stressed and going down to the drip line of the tree and just slowly watering it there in nice little trickles.
Yeah. Watering the grass is not watering a tree. People have to remember that, okay? Because you're watering just a couple inches down. You need to do a deep soak. Mm-hmm. And it's just a slow trickle, like putting the hose out there and not letting the water run down the gutter, but just a slow trickle. And or using a root feeder works really good. There's Ross root feeders. There's other Corona root feeders. There's a whole bunch of different varieties. Hook into the garden hose. They're about 2 to 3 feet long, and you stick them in the ground, and they either fertilize and water, or just water at the root zone.
All right. This one, another picture, it's nice that we can get the pictures now. Makes things a little bit easier. This one is coming from Donna in Saskatoon. I planted two incredible hydrangeas in our front yard facing west last summer, and now they're filling out and getting ready to blossom. The leaves have curled up. Also, can you tell me what's wrong with these branches? I think it's a Saskatoon berry. So there's these pictures, here. I wonder, is this the Saskatoon berry?
No, that's the hydrangea.
Okay.
So that's the hydrangea. They're curling up. Usually the curling up comes from this time of the year is from moisture. Either too wet or too dry.
Okay.
Either one of the two. Normally that's what it is. Or it could be a thrip or an aphid or something like that on the bottom side of the leaves. But you know the but most likely for moisture, that's the biggest one.
Okay.
If they're turning yellow, then that's a nutrient deficiency, and usually if it's from a high pH soil, which they don't like. They want a lower pH. And that will cause problems like that as well.
In the picture there, I'm not seeing curling that's going to cause.
I don't see the angle here.
I don't see curling that's going to cause any hard damage on that plant there. Just keep it healthy, and it will be.
Do I see blotching though on there?
Like a little bit, kind of.
Oh no!
Just a little bit of water spots.
It does look like a nutrient deficiency, but depending on the coloring of the you know, sometimes you don't get the same color back from through the air, through the internet as what is live. And but it looks like it might be a bit of a nutrient deficiency as well.
Okay, and then their second question was, they believe that they're from their Saskatoon berry bushes. Can that affect the branches of this plant?
No.
Okay.
No, it'd be two different things. And if you have different things happening to Saskatoon berries, right now you'll have rust and those kind of things. Especially now we had some moisture and some heat. You may get some fungals growing on them. And you can use a spray like Bordeaux or copper spray on them is the one that works the best for Saskatoons.
Okay. This one is coming from, let's just see the date on here, Darla in Saskatoon. Do you have any suggestions on fertilizing when it's raining like this every day? My pots and flower beds are very wet. By the time they dry up, it rains again. Just to be clear, I am loving the rain and I'm very happy. But it says I don't use the granular fertilizer. I use the one that requires a mix with water.
Yeah, if you're using a water soluble, the only way to do it is to water it in. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to overwater a plant. So that's really important. You might want to pick up a granular fertilizer just because then as it rains, it will fall over top that fertilizer and fertilize every time. Like I said before, I kind of like to do a combination. So I do the granular fertilizer and then I fertilize on top. A lot of these plants are hybrid plants, so they're heavy, heavy feeders.
And you know what we do too is we put little, they're called feet.
Okay.
And they're just little clay feet that you put three of them on each pot and it raises the pot off the ground just a little bit. Two things, it stops from my concrete from being stained, but it also helps the pot to drain better. Okay. And then air movement underneath the pot so that the holes underneath will dry out the pot a lot quicker so that the water escapes the pot better. And so that helps so that for drainage, so especially when you get rain and that kind of stuff.
But be ready. The containers, they dry out quickly. So once the rain stops, you're going to be able to add some fertilizer to them pretty quick. So that first water that you get to water them, make sure you do it with
fertilizing's
fertilizer.
Big. I mean, even for the trees and shrubs, you know, fertilizing right now is huge. Lawn, everybody fertilizing in the spring.
Yes.
But now you're going to start seeing your lawn losing that nutrients.
Yeah.
So using the groundskeeper orange bag, which is a higher nitrogen, but no phosphorus. So now's the time. July is when I usually start putting it on. And we're coming up to July next week, right?
Yeah.
So if you're out getting you're out to the near garden center picking up some stuff anyways, pick up that fertilizer. So you can put the spring water fertilizer, the green bag of groundskeeper, orange bag in the summertime, and you go back to the green bag or even the orange bag in the fall again.
All right. We can probably get to, one more here. This one is coming from Tina in Shelbrook. Couple of questions. We'll start off with this one. I have some leftover dried corn deer food. Can that be used in the garden? If yes, what can I do with it and how can I prepare it?
That'd be just like corn gluten, right? And so you just want to make it, if it's coarse, I don't know what it is she has, but if you want to grind it up or pound, you know, pulverize it a bit and you can spread it out in your area, it has to be fairly thick when you put it down.
Okay.
That's how corn gluten works. If you just sprinkle it, like make it go a long, long ways away, like a 20-pound bag of corn gluten usually does about 1,000 square feet, so that's basically 10 feet by 100 feet long.
Mm-hmm. Now, corn gluten can sometimes be a seed inoculate, so putting it in the garden might not
be a good idea. No. Don't put it in the garden.
No.
No, okay. No. Only in your shrub bed, perennial bed, in the lawn, those kind of things, but not in the garden. I wouldn't use any corn gluten type of thing in the garden because it does act as a natural pre-emergent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the second part of the question is, can I cut back ornamental crab and lilac bushes now, or should I wait until the fall?
If you're doing just some light trimming, you know, a lot of new growth and that kind of stuff, but if you want to do a major pruning, do it after the leaves fall off in the fall or in the spring before they get the leaves.
Okay. So maybe hold off a little bit, but if it's just little things, you're okay.
Light pruning, not a problem. And I mean, there's lots of people, I get lots of pictures right now of damaged trees, right?
Yes.
The windstorm came and knocked a branch off.
Hail.
Those you can cut off anytime you got the damage. Okay. And then let it dry. And if it's a big rip, then you can let it dry out. So it'll take about 2 or 3 weeks to dry out completely. And then you can kind of clean up to any spots where water might sit, so the water drains off. And then after it dries off a few weeks, then you can use a pruning paint on them, okay?
All right, perfect. We are going to take a quick break for news, then we'll get to more of your questions. You can give us a call at 1-877-332-8255. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Erin McNutt here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers. We've had Violet patiently waiting on the line here through the news break, so we won't make her wait anymore. Violet, what's your question for Rick and Jill today?
Well, I have a pear tree here that when I have first planted it, it must have been about 5 years old or so, a porcupine got after it and stripped the bark right to the very top, stripped all the bark that there was there. So I let it, my husband was going to chop it down, and I said, no, leave it be, and I might need the trunk for
a trellis or something.
Trellis, yep. Right. And it grew from the top of the graft. So I have a nice pear tree there now. But last year didn't winter very well because we had too warm a winter, and some of the branches died on top, and it is still growing to the very top, but it's not very thick or anything. But there's a lot of branches that are growing. Well, I don't know if they're branches, but they're leaves with stems on them growing from the bottom up, right up the trunk.
Yes.
Now, I'm wondering if I pick them out and prune some of them off, and that will they turn into a branch later and grow into a tree?
If you just cut them and stick them in the ground, no.
No, just cut them right off the trunk and leave the some on the trunk.
Yes,
on
yeah,
the trunk.
Yeah,
the tree is alive.
If they're coming from the underneath the graft, though, they're not going to.
Yes, they are. They're coming right up the trunk, the whole trunk.
So if they're coming from below the graft, they won't be the same pair. Okay.
Above the graft.
If they're above the graft, then they'll be the same pair. And yes. You can choose one of those to let grow up and be their new tree if you want.
Yeah, well, it won't be a new tree, but it'll be a new branch on the tree because
not
it's going right up the trunk.
Not a problem.
Oh.
Yep.
So then how many would I put around a tree, like, say, 4 or 5?
Not too many because it'll be too thick otherwise, okay?
I see.
So you might want to pick 3 at the most.
3.
Yep.
Okay. And what about the branches that are on top? There's some dead ones there.
Yeah, trim,
do I leave them until next year to cut them off?
If they're dead, you can trim them anytime.
Yeah, because there's no leaves or nothing on them.
Yep. You can trim if they're dead. You can trim them anytime.
Okay, that sounds really good then.
Okay.
And then do I fertilize it at all? I haven't fertilized it ever.
You can fertilize it right now if you want to get growth happening, okay?
Yes.
But then after that, once you get your tree established, then you slow down your fertilizer and you only use like a fruit and berry, which is a low nitrogen, but it has all the micronutrients in it, okay?
Uh-huh.
But if you want to get it growing, then you can use something like a 20-20-20 or something like that to get it growing.
Well, the tree itself is growing. It's just the little leaves along. Outside, you know, on the brand, on the trunk.
Yeah, then just use your fruit and berry.
Yeah, okay.
Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll see what happens.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, I might need it.
You can give us a call at 1-877-332-8255. We'll head to the text line here. This one is coming from Francis. Says, good morning. I have slugs in my flower and shrub beds. What is the correct way to use diatomaceous earth? They're in hostas, daylilies, also on Calgary carpet.
Yeah, you can just spread it on the ground because when they go through it, they'll get it into their joints and they'll dehydrate them. And slugs are easy to dehydrate.
Mm-hmm. One thing with diatomaceous earth is when it's put on, it needs to be put on when it's dry outside.
Yeah. Okay.
And you want to put it on quite thick as well, too. So that's one thing to watch. And you also want to make sure you're not breathing it in. Mm-hmm. It's something you don't want to get into.
Yeah, you don't want to get those crushed sea cells into your lungs, right?
No.
So,
okay. Yeah. No, so that would be the correct way to apply it. But the other thing that works really good is get some pie plates out, and everybody's been sitting around the yard for Canada Day, so you might have an extra couple cans of beer.
Yeah.
And put some beer in some pie plates, put them out, and then that will attract the slugs to those pie plates.
Or a little cottage cheese container or something like that.
Too. I watched a time-lapsed video of the beer on a pie. It was crazy.
Yep. And at nighttime, if you want to scout, you have to go out at nighttime, put a little headlamp on, and you can go pick them.
Pick them. Yeah. And then there's also new slug baits out, which are safe for your pets and that. And I like putting a little piece of plywood, a little piece of wood down, put some slug bait underneath them, and the slugs will naturally go underneath there because it's moist here, and they'll eat the bait, and then they'll die there. So,
all right,
works really well.
Few options.
Yep.
This one is coming from Bev in Yorkton. Good morning. My question is about row covers over onions that we were discussing this morning, the ones that were kind of like accordions.
Yes. Yep.
How long should I leave the row cover on the onions, and is it okay to take the cover off now, or should I just leave it all summer?
No, you could leave it all summer, but you could actually take it off now because the fly cycle is gone now. So,
okay.
I mean, you'll should be fine with that. You could actually move that over to your cabbage plants, you know, keep the cabbage moth off the cabbage. You can move them around to different spots of your garden as well.
Okay. So once you have them, you can, you don't have to keep them in the same place.
Exactly.
No, move it to where your leafy vegetables next.
Yep.
All right. This one looks like a long one. So we'll take part one in this section, and then we might have to do part two in the second part of the show here. This is Beth from Kinistano. My linden tree is looking sickly. It's about 11 to 12 years old, and last year was less full than before, and many leaves didn't look as healthy or large. The dead branches are toward the bottom of the tree. Last year, I ensured I watered it well about three times when it looked sickly. Now it is getting sufficient rainfall this spring, but there are more dead branches, which are probably the ones that didn't look well last year. What can I do?
Yeah, keep watering it. This rain isn't sufficient for those lindens. Okay, they like to be moist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's going to be moist in the first 2 or 3 inches, but that's not where the roots are. Okay, so you want to make sure that the drip line of the tree, which is the outer edge of the branches, that's where your nutrients have to be, your fertilizer, not right at the trunk.
Okay,
and that's where you need to water too. So during a heavy rainstorm, you run underneath the tree because you stay dry.
This is true. Yeah.
Right? The water is at the outer edge where the water drips down the leaves and then falls at the drip line.
Okay.
And so that's where you want to water, and then when the fertilizer, and you want to keep it moist, you want to overwater it, but you want to keep it moist. Lindens like it moist. And then they'll do fine. But with the drought, people just water their lawns, and with a little bit of rain we've had, it's not enough. Sorry. It's just not enough. But fertilizer is also key because we clean up our yards.
Yeah.
Right? We rake up the leaves, we pick up the grass clippings, we do all that kind of stuff. So we don't leave any food. Like in nature, if you look out along the riverbank, all the leaves
fall
down, you get all kind of leaf mold and everything else. It's all natural fertilizer. Well, we don't leave that at all. So, so making sure that you actually have to be fertilizing your plant and even adding things like your alfalfa pellet tea around the trees and that kind of stuff, the drip line, which gives them all that boron, magnesium, calcium. It gives them all the other natural nutrients that they don't normally would get after you've cleaned everything up.
This might be a time for the rebar too, just to check the moisture.
Actually, rebar works good. If you can't stick it into the ground, you'll know it's too dry, right?
You know that it needs a bit of water.
Yeah. So if you can stick it down there and it comes up dripping, you know it's too wet. But you need to go down, you know, for those trees, you need to go down 12 inches, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the only way you're going to check whether it's enough moisture.
All right. Perfect. We are going to take a quick break. Then we'll get to the second part of the question from Beth. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I was getting worried there for a moment.
Lots of octopuses garden there.
Yeah. We're back with more Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Erin McNutt here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyk. A busy show. We've got lots of questions that we've gone over, but we still have the second part of Beth from Kinistano's question. So this one is about Bartzella peony. She says it's about 7 years old. Spring of 24, it never emerged, which she attributed to a lack of snow over the winter. Then during the 2023 season, it grew really well and was looking very healthy and established. This spring, while cleaning it up on the surface to see if there was any new growth, I was pulling out the dead growth and tugging. I pulled out a fleshy taproot. It hasn't shown any signs of growth since then. That was about 2 to 3 weeks ago. Is there anything I can do to prompt growth now?
Well, one thing you want to do is see if you have viable roots down there too. Now, this is a Bartzella peony. It's a specialty peony. It's an Aitoa peony. So a lot of collectors will know this mm-hmm. one. And they're so, so pretty. What you want to do is you want to just sort of pull the soil array around the base of the plant, and you'll see sort of these little pinkish, round bumps on the top. And those are called the eyes of the peony.
Okay.
Now, if you have a root system but no eyes, you're not going to get any new growth or buds this next year on them. So that would be the sign that you have. Now, if you've had lots of winter damage, sometimes early spring, I would maybe dig it up, maybe take some, prune the roots off, take some of those sort of yucky roots off. The other thing too, that she said when she was cleaning up the foliage, mm-hmm. she was pulling on it.
Yeah.
I never do that with my perennials because then you could pull up the roots mm-hmm. as well. Always cut everything right to the base.
Okay.
And just at the base, and then allow it to come from the bottom again. When you pull it out, you're going to damage the root system. And especially with the peonies, you don't want to damage those little eyes that are under the soil.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like usually we want to wait till about mid-June, and then we sort of say, hey, you know what? That's if nothing's yep. come up, then you might have some winter kill damage. We're getting past that point now. So yeah. you would have seen new growth. I'm saying that this plant might have got that winter kill and you might be looking at replacing
and
it.
And if there is some piece of that root that's hibernating right now and will come up next year, don't overwater it because yeah. you'll rot that root. It must be moist, but do not overwater to try to get it to come back.
But have a peek at the root system. If you pull it back, like you said, if it is gone yep. dormant and it's hibernating early for whatever reason mm-hmm. because it was stressed, yep. You'll see nice firm system root systems with those little eyes on it is what you're looking for.
Okay. We head to Greg in Regina. I have lots of grackles pecking out at front and back lawns this summer. It's almost as if they're aerating the lawn.
Yep.
What are they hunting for? And is this good for the lawn?
Oh, they're eating lots of grubs. I got tons of those crazy things and they drive me nuts because they go and clean the nest out all the time.
Okay.
And they seem to like to drop it right on my deck.
Of course.
They don't just drop it in the grass. They got to drop it in the deck and they got a flight path, right?
Yeah.
And it's white streaks going down my two spots, one in my driveway in the front and one in my patio in the back. And yeah, they're like little blackbirds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and yeah, but they're great. They go into the grass and they're eating all kinds of grubs and insects and everything else. So they're feeding their young like crazy right now because the young are about, they're just small. They haven't quite started flying yet, but they're some of them on the ground bouncing around and they're swooping you to keep you away from them and everything else. but they're all, any kind of those birds, they're great ways of keeping, you know, a balance to your ecosystem in your garden and
okay.
yard, like the robins, the grackles, the wrens. If you can get wren houses and that, they go and eat the aphids and that. So birds are.
And if you want to keep birds around, keep a house nearby and also keep yep. a water source as
yep,
well. They need
source.
Water as well.
Okay. I know grackles are a bit messy, I find, but I mean, they do a great thing in the garden.
They're helping out. So
they
a little mess might be okay.
Yep.
All right. We have Linda from Melville. When and how do I split hostas?
Best time to split them is when they're dormant. So early spring, again, you'd want to mark them in the fall so that you know where they are with mm-hmm. like a flag or something. Or you can do it in the fall after the leaves have turned yellow and kind of died back down, then you can split them in the fall. Now, the thing about doing in the fall is that depending on the season, how much snow we have, you can get some winter kill as well because they're not as established. So
okay.
prime time is in the spring, but if you have to do it, you can do it in the fall.
All right. We have a question about plum trees. This one from Marie in Saskatoon. It appears my plum trees have rust as some of the leaves are starting to turn orange.
Yeah.
What should be done?
Yeah, just use copper sulfate. Spray them. And
okay.
spray them about every 14 days apart and do it 3 times.
Okay.
And then so once 14 days, once 14 days again, you should have it under control.
All right. Is that something you can do when we're getting all this rain or is there, you can do it anytime?
Just wait until it quit do in between the rains. You can do it. So, and then that's why you have to do it in 14 days again. And but yeah, that's the way with these rains and with the humidity and heat, it'll mm-hmm. spread even more. So one thing nice about doing it in between the rains is that copper sulfate is a preventive. It stops it. It suppresses and keeps from spreading. It's not a cure.
Okay.
Okay. So that's why you want to keep doing it the three times.
Yeah. And a lot of times you'll see some damage on your leaves. The damage isn't going to go away. It's mm-hmm. just going to prevent it from spreading. To elsewhere.
Yep.
Okay. So you're not going to see the perfect green leaves come yep. back, but.
But it's new growth, mm-hmm. fertilizing, obviously, you know, to get the new growth happening. And then that the copper spray will keep it from spreading to the new leaves.
Yeah, and then some light pruning sometimes too helps.
Yep.
All right. We've been talking a lot through the show about different sort of pests, and potato bugs have come up a few times. So Lori has a tip. She says you just have to look under the leaves and squish the yellow eggs or the orange eggs.
Yep. Yeah. Especially for the lily beetles. You'll see the row of orange eggs, right? Mm-hmm. So it works really well. Or using, like Jill always says, a lint brush.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. That would make things a little bit easier.
You roll it up the backside of the leaves and it picks them all up.
Not a bad deal. This one from Sean says, what's a good power to use on vegetable plant, maybe powder?
Powder
to use on the vegetable plants in the garden. Got something eaten. Something is eating the leaves.
Yeah, they've taken all the powders off the market in Saskatchewan.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Lots of places in Canada. So there's not much you can do for powders. What you have to do is you gotta scout. You gotta look to see what kind of bugs you have and combat them.
And diatomaceous earth, especially on the ground, because the bugs go back and forth from the leaf to the ground. So just using diatomaceous earth around the base, that's about what you can really do.
But deterrents, companion plantings.
Yes.
If you read up different things, cinnamon. Or chili powder. Mm-hmm. Or
basil plants. Marigold plants.
Yep. Yeah. Mint keeps ants away. Yeah. So there's lots of different things that you can companion plant to keep the bugs away. So figuring out what's your problem first, and then we can sort of help you combat it that way. But the dust, as far as that goes, you can't buy them anymore.
You used to buy Rotenone and all this kind of thing. They're all gone.
But if you have any questions that way, info@dutchgrowers.com. Fire us off a question this week and we can send some more pictures, and then we can help identify what's going on. What's the actual issue?
Mm-hmm. All right. We've been talking a lot about companion planting today. There was bush beans too with potatoes.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, bush beans.
Learning things.
Bush beans, plant your onions in between. Yes. Yeah. So many great things you can plant together.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show for another week. Of course, we have lots of people who are probably doing some projects out here for Canada Day. Maybe you're lucky enough to get an extra long weekend with the Monday off as well.
Don't forget about your fertilizing plants. Now it's time to fertilize the plants, and the lawn is coming up again. So yeah, keep everything growing.
Yeah, and you got the rain now for a lot of parts of Saskatchewan.
And
so
with that moisture from the rain, give them a little bit extra now, so it goes down. The moisture goes down deeper to help preserve that tree for longer for the hot part of the summer.
Perfect. Of course, we'll be back next week to take more of your questions. You've been listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.